Well, I have the blessing and opportunity to introduce the next speaker in this session. And a close friend of mine, and I think that's something that we all recognize once you're part of Network 127, how important it is to have a resource of people to come and, you know, to be able to visit with, to cry on each other's shoulders at times and encourage each other. And Robert's been one of those, and I think that we can all identify with that. And Robert's been one of those to me anyway. But Robert is a licensed professional counselor. He's also a licensed professional counselor supervisor in South Carolina. He has served as executive director with Southeastern Children's Home for 32 years. And he also serves as the director of the Southeastern Counseling Center. And Robert has been married to his wife, Kimberly, you know, I'm sure he has a lot of fun with all of that in regards to the first and last name, and for 41 years, and the proud father of three children, Katie, Jeremy, and Austin. He has seven grandchildren, which I know he spends a lot of time with, and he shares that with me an awful lot. But Robert served on the board of directors of Network 127 on two different occasions, once serving as the board chair. He has also been involved in hosting two Network 127 annual conferences. So that's a credit and a pat on the back for him to host two of the conferences. So, but Robert will be retiring as executive director of Southeastern Children's Home at the end of June. So, he will be missed, I'm sure, because I think we have all have had really good relationships with him, and we appreciate what he has brought to our conferences. So his plan is to spend a lot of time with his grandchildren, travel with his wife, Kim, and spend lots of time. He didn't put this on here as far as he said at the lake, but I know he'll be at his cabin on the lake. So we want to welcome Robert.
Well, if it wasn't difficult enough for the speaker this morning to follow Wesley Leonard, I got to follow David Fraze, which is no prize, can I tell you? David is just a gifted, fabulous speaker, and no doubt a wonderful professor. But thank you, Randy, for those comments, and thank you, Chuck, for inviting me to speak on this very last Network 127 conference. I've kind of been on my farewell tour for the last 6 months to churches, and so as I go around, they're really sad. You know, I stand up and I say, thank you for supporting this ministry for such a long time, and I'll probably never see you again. And so it's really sad, you know, to do that. But Chuck and I go back a really long way. We go back to our Lipscomb days, and we were both in the social work program, and Chuck took social work really serious, and I didn't. And so I guess I wasn't a real hit the first day. We had a new social work director. Her name was Jean Bowman. You remember Jean, don't you? And if Jean was nothing else, she was a serious woman. I mean, she'd been deputy commissioner for DCS, and she was smart. She knew everybody. And so I guess my sense of humor just didn't work for her. And so the first day when she arrived, I thought it'd be really funny for me to enter her class through the window. And so I did that. And I was the only one laughing. And so Chuck was president of the social work club. And I mean, he had prestige. And they let me in the club because I paid my dues. But I sat in the back of the room and tried not to heckle Chuck too much. But we became really, really dear friends through that time and through 41 years, Chuck, and in Christian child care. And listen, I think probably somebody needs to tell you this morning, Chuck, so I'm gonna take it upon myself to tell you, when you were talking about the preacher and him getting along with young people and old people, and then your group, brother, you and old people. And so if this is the first time you've heard that, then please let me bestow that on you. You to be an old person. Well, you know, this week many have asked me, what are you going to do? What are you going to do in retirement? And my wife wants to know that too, because she says, you're not staying home. I'm not sure we like each other enough to be home all the time. And so Randy said we have a little place on the lake and it's 900 square feet. And so we intend to split our time between the lake and our home in Duncan. But we're going to split our time because she's going to be there half the time and I'm going to be there half the time. And that's how we're going to stay married, Harold, for 42 years, you know. But our grandchildren live 8 houses down. And we just prize them. And our oldest grandson is 14, and he's turning into a man. He's got his first girlfriend. Now, he's not talking about her because it's his first girlfriend. But his mom and dad happen to have access to his text messages, so they know who she is. But then the youngest is 2. And his name is Will. His real name is William, but we call him Will. And we get to spend a lot of time with Will. He really likes me a lot because I give him everything he wants. Why wouldn't he like me? And so his dad will come in and I'll have a bowl of cookies out for him and he'll move the bowl. What kind of dad does that? Recently, Will was at our house, and he likes apple juice, and they like him to drink water. And so he comes and says, Papa, juice, Papa, juice. And I understand what that means. I speak baby. And so I fill up the little cup with the apple juice, you know, the little animal heads or whatever they are, superstars or Batman or whatever are on top of the heads, And man, he just drank the whole thing down. He whiffed it down. And he came back and he said, Papa, juice. And so, as a good papa, I went for the juice, right? And I said, Will, if your mom was here, she'd tell me that you need to have water in this bottle. And with no hesitation, he looked at me and said, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, in my next phase of my life, so what y'all don't know about me is I coached baseball for a really long time, and I coached some really good baseball teams. David, my team was 6th in the country at one point, and so we were pretty good. And you know, I got these plaques and these things that are now sitting in boxes in the attic. You know where they go, and I was hard on the umpires. Oh gosh, I know y'all can't imagine that about me, but I was hard on the umpires that they could never have good strike zones and they missed lots of calls, at least in my mind. And so I decided in my next life that I'm going to be an umpire because I need to pay back for all the punishment I inflicted upon these people. Some of them are in mental asylums now, and so they're not right. And so I want to be an umpire. And I umpired just last week. I umpired a 6-year-old game. No kidding. This is no kidding. And there's only one umpire, and you're like down the third base line off the field trying to make the calls around the field. And there was a close call with a guy going from first to second for a double play, and I called him safe because you can't call what you don't see, and I didn't see it, so I called him safe. Well, so this dad went ballistic. He went ballistic and started shaking the fence and hollering and carrying on. And I thought, dude, I've seen your kid. He's not going to the majors. But he took it so serious. And then another coach got involved, and he just had had enough, and he turned around and said, "Would you just shut up?" Well, that stirred him up even more, right? And so I earned my $40. $40. Well, I'm really honored to be able to speak to my favorite group in all the world. I have such admiration and respect for you all, for what you do, what you give, what you sacrifice. And even though I'm going to retire, I'm not changing my cell phone number at my wife's displeasure. And so if I can ever serve you in any way, please reach out to me. I can pray for you if nothing else. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, I can give you a word of encouragement. Well, let me begin by saying that much of what I'll share with you today does have empirical evidence. I mean, there is data behind what I'm going to share with you, but some of it doesn't. Some of it's just experience over the last 41 years of working in ministry and working in Christian childcare. And so kind of what that means is some of what I'll share with you will be anecdotal, which means you can take it or leave it. You can listen or not listen. But I think that maybe I can share a few things that will make a difference, that if you'll consider, at least think about, maybe it'll be helpful. Well, Kim and I started in Christian childcare in 1981. We'd been married for 6 months, and we were veterans, right? At 6 months, you know everything. And so we were offered a job at Christian Home and Bible School in Mount Dora, and Kim and I would be house parents, and I was hired as a social worker in the social work department. And so Kim and I were the house parents for six little girls, ages 3 to 13, all sisters. I think they call that baptism by fire, because we didn't know how to be a husband and wife, nevertheless, how to be parents. But we loved these little girls, and we loved on them. We didn't know how. We didn't know anything about clinical anything. We just knew that when they crawled up in our laps, they needed a hug. And we knew that they needed a safe place. And we knew that they needed to hear about Jesus. And so we did that work for about 6 months. And then when we moved into our own very first house, the athletic director, Monty Boyd, called me one day and he said, "Look, they're going to kick one of my star basketball players out of the home. He's not, but I need him on the basketball court." He said, "Would you and Kim be foster parents to him? Would you take him into your home?" And so we did that, and the kid ate like Jethro. He ate everything that didn't eat him. And he ate cereal out of a serving bowl. And when we finished supper at night, he ate everything that was left. And Kim said, "I think I'm starving this child." But we loved him. And when Sean graduated from high school, we moved on to North Carolina, where I was the first director of professional services for Agape of North Carolina. And we were licensing foster homes, and we were getting the ball rolling. But my dream was to work with kids one-on-one, not to be an administrator, not to be doing that kind of work. And so when Cletus Stutzman called and he said, "Would you come back to Mount Dora and be our director of social services?" I said, "Well, I don't know, Cletus. You know, I've just been here for a little less than a year and making another move." And he said, "Robert, I'll make it worth your while if you'll come back." And he did make it worth my while. I took a $2,000 salary cut. I lost my company car. I had to pay some of my own health care where I wasn't paying any of it. He made it well worth my time. But I knew that's where God was calling me. And that's where I wanted to be. And so Kim and I moved back to Mount Dora. And we stayed there about 8 years before we became director of Southeastern Children's Home in Duncan. And I tell you that history only to say that perhaps today I may have an idea or two, maybe just one. When I go to conferences, I don't know how you guys do, where you got to justify the cost of going and staying in a fancy place like the Rosen and eating good food. Kim and I got box pizza last night and took it to our room. But I think that if you leave a conference with one good idea, one idea that maybe you can implement in your ministry, in your organization, that'll really make a difference in the life of a child, then it was worth it. It was worth the cost. Well, this is not the first time I've done this presentation. In fact, last night I stood right here at this podium and gave this presentation to a captive audience. And I didn't get a single complaint by anybody because I was by myself. And they left the microphone on. And so I even talked into the microphone. And probably people out there thought, there's a crazy man in there. But sometimes we do that, don't we? We try to go the extra mile to make sure that we're doing the right thing, the thing that's best. Friends, Christian childcare in America today is becoming increasingly challenging. Many days we find ourselves with more questions than answers, don't we? Do we take only private placements, or do we take kids from the state? Do we take money from the government? Or do some of us think that will be a compromise to our mission or our vision or our values? Do we debate those kind of things? Early on in my career, I actually attended a debate between two Church of Christ directors over whether you can take government money or you can't take government money. And the guy that was adamant against it, he got to speak first, and oh man, he gave a really inspirational talk about why not to take government money. And the second guy got up and he said, "Do your kids walk on sidewalks? Do they go to public school?" In fact, let me bring it down. Do you pay taxes on your property or the donations that come in? And it was a quiet, quiet room. I don't think either person changed their mind, and that's okay, isn't it? It's okay that they didn't change their mind, but just that they could have a discussion. Well, so other questions are, do we just hire people that are Church of Christ members? Or can we hire people of faith that also love and care about children? Are we going to be a long-term facility? Or are we going to be a short-term facility? Or are we going to be traditional providers? Or are we going to be treatment-based providers? Where are we going? And how are we going to get there? Christian childcare is tough. And I dare say it's not for the faint-hearted. Over the last 41 plus years, I've seen a lot of people. I've met a lot of people in Christian childcare. And Jimmy, some of them aren't here today. Some of them got into the business for just a little while, and then they moved on to something else. And no doubt they started this kind of work with the best intentions. But there's a lot of work out there that needs to be done, and some of it is a lot less stressful, takes a lot less time, and pays a whole lot more money. I wonder if some of them left because of the secondary trauma. You know, we're reading a lot today about secondary trauma and the impact it's having on child care professionals all over the country and all over the world. I'm wondering if the trauma just got to them, that they just seeing these children coming in. I'm mindful of a young lady that we took at Southeastern Children's Home who had been in a Russian orphanage. And by the time she came to live with us, she'd been adopted by a mom who she and her husband divorced over the adoption of the child. She had been in and out of mental institutions most of the time she'd been in America. And he asked us if we would take her and if we would try to provide for her. And I don't know how I feel about secondary trauma. I'm sure it's real. There's a lot written about it. But I do remember this young lady because one day she was at a group home and she had suicidal ideations. And so the house parents called and said, would you come up and talk to her? And so I went up to the group home and I sat beside her, and she was on a rocking chair on the front porch. And I said, what's going on? And we talked a little bit, but I saw her fiddling with this little pencil sharpener, you know, the little, it's about that big, and they have little razor blades in them, and you know, pencil sharpener, right? You're smart enough to know what those are. And I saw her fiddling with it. And I said, honey, I'm not going to touch you unless you take that pencil sharpener apart and you take that razor blade out, because I have to protect you. I have to make sure you don't hurt yourself. And so I no more got it out of my mouth that she jumped up and started running away from me. And I chased her. And she went down on one knee and she took that razor blade and she went right down to the bone. And she said, oh my gosh, I cut myself really deep, didn't I? And I said, honey, you're going to be okay. And I signaled to a caseworker to get me gauze, and because I didn't want her to look at it. And I wrapped up her arm. And we loved on her all the way to the ambulance, where they took her to the hospital and stitched up her arm, and she spent a few days there, and then she came home. Secondary trauma. I wonder if some of these people quit because of secondary trauma. I wonder if some of them quit because they just got tired of begging for money. I was this idealistic director in 1990, and Harold, I thought people ought to just give us money because it's right, it's good, it's biblical. They ought to just give us money to take care of these kids. And I realized if I was going to get paid, that didn't work. And I had to go out and I had to beg people for money. And I had to sell the story that you talked about yesterday, David. I had to tell the story over and over again. But for some people, that may just not be their thing. But for many of you, you felt the calling. You felt called by God to this ministry to serve underprivileged children, and in some cases, adults and moms and families. But you felt led to this. And God gave you the unique gifts. Because I think it's a gift, brothers and sisters, to be able to work in ministry for a long time. It's a gift that God didn't give to everybody. God didn't give me the gift. He gave David to be a public speaker. He didn't give me that. But he did give me the gift of being able to hold a little girl and wrap up her arm and to love her when she'd spent so much of her life being unloved. Doesn't really matter this morning your title, whether you're on the front line, the back line, the middle line, linebackers, linemen. It doesn't matter where you serve. God has called you to this. And I want to thank you for making a difference every day. I challenge my staff every day to make the difference in one child. Just one. Every day, make it your goal to help one child. Well, I'd like to ask you a few questions before I move on with my presentation this morning that I think might speak to us surviving and thriving in Christian childcare moving ahead. And I think the first question we have to ask ourselves is, why do we do this? Why are we in Christian childcare? Why do we start? Why do we continue? Why do we do it? It's hard work. Some of your phones go off like mine all hours of the night. And I've gone out on holidays and kids' birthdays and anniversaries. And I'm sorry, dear, for all of that. But it's what we do. It's how we serve. So why do you do it? It's crazy. Why do you do it? Is it a job for you? Or is it a ministry? When Brad and I interview anybody for Southeastern Children's Home, I ask them that. Why are you here today? Are you called? Just need a job? Some of the worst employees I've ever had were people that just needed a check. And so 41 years tells me it's not worth it. If they don't feel led to do this, they ought to not do it. Because they'll have way more negative impact than they will positive. Some of you may have been foster kids yourself, and so you decided that you wanted to give back because of what you'd experienced. You heard Rhonda Shortino on the video yesterday who wants to give back because of the experiences that she had. And listen, Chuck talked about going back a long way. I go back a real long way with Rhonda. And she was a single mom. And you can tell her I said this if you want. She was overweight. And she had dark hair. And she was smart, smart, smart. But she didn't look anything like the Rhonda you saw on the screen. Because she hadn't told anybody about her abuse. She hadn't worked through that trauma at all. She'd gone through a bad marriage, had this baby girl that she was trying to love and figure it out for herself. And so I encourage you to read her book. It's powerful. Because she would say, don't use that as an excuse not to be successful. Learn from that so that you can teach others, and maybe some of you are in this work. Because, or some of you are in this work for the big bucks. For that check you get twice a month, right? You just don't know where to spend all that money, do you, Jimmy? Well, it doesn't matter your answer except for the big bucks part. It doesn't matter why you do what you do as long as you feel led to do that. And you feel the power of God. And you feel like that this is where you're supposed to be. Well, today I'd like to discuss six areas that I believe are important If you're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, the first is, I believe that you have to develop a healthy peer group. If you're going to survive and thrive, you got to make friends in the industry. You need to know who you can call when you have a problem or when you just need to talk to somebody. You need to have somebody that you can count on to pray for you in your family, somebody that you can just talk to, or maybe several somebodies who you trust. I remember well interviewing for the job at Southeastern Children's Home. And the board asked me a lot of questions. I'm not sure I gave them a lot of good answers because I came from a fairly large agency. So they said, you know, can you manage the books? And I said, well, I'm sure I can, but we have somebody that does that. And they said, well, you know, can you oversee maintenance? And I said, I'm sure I can, but we have somebody that does that. They said, can you raise money? And I said, we have somebody that does that. And they said, can you do any of this? And I said, unequivocally, I don't know a thing about raising money. Not one thing. But I can learn. And I will learn. And I know people who can raise money. And so they were really hard up for a director, so they hired me. Well, I remember calling my friend Tom Burton about 1,000 times to say, Tom, how do you do this? How do you start this? What do you say when you go to a church? How do you do it? How do you write a mail appeal? And finally, Tom got tired of answering my phone calls, and he said, come to Nashville. Come spend a day with me. I'll teach you how to write a mail appeal. And I'll help you write one here that you can take home with you. And that mail appeal raised more money than it cost for me to go to Nashville to learn from him. Well, later on, I heard about a group among Churches of Christ development directors that were getting together a couple times a year and talking about the greatest and latest things in fundraising. And although that wasn't purely my job, we sure couldn't afford to hire anybody in development. I had to do that. And so they welcomed me in. And I listened to how they raised money and what they did to talk to donors. And then later, Randy and I heard about a CEO group that was meeting, right, Randy? And we were young execs, and these were mature, experienced execs. And they allowed Randy and I to join their group. And we learned from all of their years' experience some of the potholes that we need to avoid. We learned from their experience, and they were gracious to us. Well, then I was invited to join a group from North and South Carolina of ministers mostly, but from all denominations. From Methodist, there was a Methodist minister, and a Presbyterian minister, and a Baptist minister, and an Episcopalian minister, and so we began. They asked, would you like to come? It's kind of an invitation-only group. And I didn't know why they were asking me, because these were guys from big agencies, multi-gazillion dollar budgets and big endowments. And they asked if I'd like to join. And I didn't know what it was about, but I thought, you know, this is going to take time. And I need to go to my board president. I need to ask him if that's all right if I join that group. And when I did, he said, by all means, you need to be learning. It's a life process. And so I joined this group. And what I learned very quickly was in this group, it was about stress management. We were only allowed to talk about serious conversation for 15-minute increments. And then after 15 minutes, somebody tell a joke or tell a funny story or something that happened, and we laughed and we laughed and we laughed. And we smoked cigars by the stream. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that here. And it was fun. And it was educational and it was informational. And some of those men have passed away now. And our group all turn out for the funerals. If their spouse dies or something, we all turn out for each other. And when I was sick 5 or 6 years ago, they reached out to me. And they were concerned for me. And it was an invaluable peer group. And it didn't matter. Can I say this in this group? It didn't matter that they weren't Church of Christ members, David. They were believers in their own right. And we didn't judge each other. We loved each other. And so, if you're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, I think you need to have a healthy peer group. Number two, if you're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, you must take time every day to be a visionary. I'd been director about 3 years when some of you are familiar with the Duke Endowment. It's one of the largest private endowments in the country. And they put out a lot of money, in fact, $5,000 a person, to go to a week-long think tank. Well, I didn't know what a think tank was. And they said, you have to invest in the hotel room, that's your part, the hotel room and the meals, and we'll pay the $5,000. And so they brought in the brightest people from business. They weren't childcare people. They weren't. They were business people who'd been successful running major companies. And I spent a week. And the one thing that I've never forgotten, and there's probably a lot that filtered into my work, but the one thing that they said over and over again is that every day you have to take time to be a visionary. Because if you don't, you're going to be left behind. We all get wrapped up, don't we, in the mundane. It ties us up every day. We spend so much time dealing with the urgent that some days we never get to the important. What does it mean to be a visionary? I believe a visionary is a person who is thinking about and planning for the future with imagination and wisdom. Do you do that for your ministries? Do you spend time every day thinking about, even just for a few minutes, where you're going? Where you want to see your ministry end up? If our ministries are going to flourish, and we're going to survive as leaders, we must take time to be visionaries. This one writer says that the keys to being an effective visionary are to believe in the vision. Believe in it, because you're the salespeople. You got to tell the story. You have to believe in what you do, or others won't believe in what you do. Number two, he says you got to be committed to the vision. Are we committed to our vision? And what would you say your vision is? You know, I was an accreditation peer reviewer in my previous life. And I went around to different organizations. And man, it's kind of fun because they jump when you walk in. You know that, Jimmy. They jump when you walk in because you're the expert. You might not know anything, but when you walk in, you're the expert. And it was kind of fun to walk around the agency and walk up to the janitor and say, "Do you know what the mission of your agency is? Do you know what your mission statement says? Do you know the vision? Do you know the values?" And they're nervous. They're real nervous, and they're trying to spout out, you know, what the mission is for their agency and what the vision values are. But after the first accreditation, they get smart, and they write it down and glue it on their desk. And so they say, "Do you mind if I read it?" I said, "Nah, go ahead. You got it this close to you, you're doing exactly what I would have you do. Be committed to the vision." And he says, number three, be willing to try new ideas. Don't be so committed to an antiquated vision that you're not willing to change it when the times change, when your purpose changes. I look at David Jordan. I was invited 100 years ago to go to work for Agape before David even accepted the job. And I remember the agency. And that agency is nothing like it was 35 years ago, David. It doesn't even look the same. I don't even think it's in the same buildings. Because David was willing to revisit the vision over and over again, and he was willing to try new ideas. Being a visionary is about problem solving. And so it's no surprise to any of you that it requires flexibility. It requires you to continue learning and being willing to act on that new knowledge that you've received. If you're going to be effective in Christian childcare, if you're going to thrive and survive, I think every day you need to revisit the vision. Number three, if we're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, we need to do a better job of self-care. We're terrible at it, folks. I know some of you, and you know me. We're not that good at self-care. According to the Global Self-Care Federation, I bet y'all didn't know that. You didn't know there's a Global Self-Care Foundation, did you? Self-care can be defined as the practice of individuals looking after their own health by using the knowledge and information available to them. It is a decision that empowers individuals to look after their own health. So what do you do to take care of yourself? Are you eating right? I've seen some of you eating since I got here. I'm going to assume it's the exception to the rule. Are you eating right? Are you exercising regularly? Are you taking time for yourself and for your family and for your friends? David, I read a lot about minister burnout because those guys are on call. I mean, at least people think they are. They're not supposed to have a life. They're supposed to answer that phone all the time. And many of you understand that as Christian childcare people. When the phone rings, you have to answer. Have you found a recreation outlet? Do you play basketball or do you play softball or? I'm not going to play football anymore, David. Or do you play pickleball? How many of you have ever played pickleball? Listen, I never even heard of pickleball until a year or so ago, and I walked into the YMCA, and I saw these courts and people hitting with these wooden paddles, and I thought, what are they doing? And a lady tried to explain to me pickleball. And so Kim and I are committed to learning how to play pickleball in our retirement. Because if it's no fun, it's just fun to say pickleball. Are you sleeping enough? Are you getting enough rest? There's a lot written about the value of rest and replenishing the temple of God. Are you praying enough? We'll talk about that a little more later. James Campbell, a therapist and trainer and public speaker, says that the failure to take care of ourselves can lead to what he called compassion fatigue. Have you ever experienced compassion fatigue? He says you define compassion fatigue as things that used to bring you pleasure no longer bring you pleasure. The things that made you happy no longer make you happy because you're just worn out. And so we have to take care of ourselves. Are any of you guilty of not taking care of yourself? I joke sometimes with my staff that it's cost me in 2021, because we're too new in 2022, it's costing me about $250 a gym visit. $250. You know why that is, don't you, ma'am? Because I only went twice. And so that's a pretty big amount to pay the YMCA, but they're a good charity, and I'm happy to donate my money. But Kim and I do try to walk every day. We don't always walk together. Some days we do, and some days we don't. And now that I'm an umpire, I get a lot of exercise chasing the ball around the field. I have a bruise right here, David. Kid just whacked me the other day. Took me out. Mr. Campbell says that compassion fatigue is a real thing. And if we don't take care of ourselves, how can we take care of anybody else? How can we take care of the children that we're called to care for? Another writer says that we need to assess our trauma inputs if we're going to take care of ourselves. He says that traumas come in all shapes and sizes, and we take in a lot of that. And so how does it go back out? You know, I describe it sometimes in therapy as a needles in a haystack. And those needles go into that haystack and nobody pays any attention to them. And there's lots of room in the haystack for those needles. But when they start coming out, for no real good reason, then we find out we haven't dealt with that. And so we have to manage those traumas as part of self-care. He says we have to avoid falling into a victim mentality. That we're tired and we're worn out and we don't have enough money and we can't hire enough employees. And they all want to make more than we make. And the millennials want to walk in day one and they want to make $60,000 walking in the door. You know them, right? And so it's easy to feel sorry for ourselves, but that's not why we do what we do. And we ought to be reminded regularly that we do this because we're called to do this. We do this because we're committed to the less fortunate, to the underprivileged. We had a young lady arrive a few years ago, and she didn't have any shoes on. She came in the door with no shoes on. And I said, "Honey, where are your shoes?" And she said, "I don't know." Because see, most of our kids get taken out in the middle of the night with a trash bag, if they get a trash bag, to put their stuff in. And so I said, honey, we'll give you shoes. We'll provide you with shoes. And so we went and we were pointing out her choices for shoes. And she said, can I really have a pair of Nikes? I've never had a pair of Nikes. You bet she got a pair of Nikes. You know, when my daughter got her first, she's, how old is she, Brad? 38, 39? When she got her first pair of Nikes, they were this big. Because my kid was going to have Nikes. I might not have supper, but she was going to have Nikes. And so, it's easy to fall into the victim mentality. He says, number three, we need to cherish our family and friends. Because we don't know how long we're going to have them. You talked a little bit yesterday, David, about your mom. And I've lost my mom and dad now, and they've gone on to be with the Lord. But we don't know how long we're going to have them. A few years ago, I was asked to preach the funeral of a 16-year-old who got in his car that night excited on top of the world to go see his girlfriend. And it started raining, and he lost control of the car. Hardest funeral I've ever preached. I think I bawled as much as the family bawled. Sometimes we take our family and friends for granted. And part of taking care of ourselves is taking care of each other as friends and family and loving each other. That's why I think, I'm not standing up tooting the horn for small groups, but I think that's where small groups came out of. Because we could have this small core of people that we could love and minister to and take care of. He says, we also need to attend education and training. And then he finally says he can engage. We need to engage in interest outside of our work. We need to have life after childcare. We have to go home. We have to find fun things to do. Well, I need to go quickly because I talk too much. So number four is that if you're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, you need to set daily measurable goals. And that's not the same as the vision. It's setting your own schedule, being in control of your own schedule. I heard a story about a guy who was a time management consultant. He went to a corporation and they hired him to look at their time management, their efficiency. And so he came in and he walked around and he met with everybody. And he told the president of the company, get everybody together, I'll tell them my findings. And so they all got together. He said, thank you for being nice to me today. I appreciate it. He said, here's what I want you to do. Every morning, come in and write the 10 things you hope to get accomplished that day. Check them off as you accomplish them. Leave them on your desk when you go home that night. Come back the next morning. Take those things you didn't accomplish, add to them to come up with 10, and do it again and again and again. Thank you for having me. The story goes, the president said, I am not paying you $10,000 for that. I'm not paying for that. He said, that's fine. He said, I'll tell you what. Implement this strategy with your people. And after 30 days, if you haven't saved more than my fee, don't pay me. The story ends with him getting the check in 2 weeks. We're not great at it, but we have to get better at time management. There's a lot of famous people that talked about time management. Listen to a few. He who every morning plans the transaction of that day and follows that plan carries a thread that will guide him through the labyrinth of the most busy life, Victor Hugo. Lack of direction, not lack of time, is a problem. We all have 24-hour days, Zig Ziglar. The most efficient way to live reasonably is every morning make a plan of one's day and every night to examine the results obtained, Alexis Carroll. The bad news is time flies. The good news is you're the pilot. Michael Altshuler. And then finally, by failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. Benjamin Franklin. If we're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, we have to become better time managers. Number five, if we're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, we need to find new ways to carry out our missions. In 1909, Tennessee Orphans Home was founded in Columbia, Tennessee. In 1914, Potter Children's Home began providing for children. And most of our early agencies provided for kids in residential group care. But over the years, we've changed, haven't we? We have foster care agencies that provide foster care for sibling groups and for kids in order to provide a family-like atmosphere. We opened adoption agencies who specialize in some in infant adoption, some in older adoption, some in sibling group adoptions. But we've been willing to change. Some folks opened counseling centers because they realized we have a mental health epidemic in our country and we got to do something. And if we can help these families on the front end, maybe their kids don't need to come into foster care. Folks, we need to be open to new ways. We need to be open to things like accreditation. Some of you are just anti-accreditation folks, and that's okay with me. Southeastern Children's Home made the decision to become accredited 15 years ago, and we did that because it sort of was a good housekeeping seal of approval. And yet, through that process, we became better. We became more transparent. We had every aspect of our work evaluated, and that was a good thing. Because we weren't as good as we thought we were. Some use proven trauma models because what we've learned is all of our kids experience trauma. I'm rostered as a TFCBT therapist, a trauma-focused cognitive behavior therapist, because that's one therapy that's proven to work with traumatized children. Some of us use crisis prevention models. And those models are intended to keep kids from having crisis. But if they're gonna, how to deal with them appropriately so that we don't re-traumatize a kid. And those are just three things. There are many, many more. And I'm going to close this morning with this one. Number six, if we're going to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, we need to have a committed walk with God. How's your walk with God? How's your prayer life? Do you make every time every day to spend at least a few minutes in Scripture? I have a dear friend in Texas, and every morning he sends me a Scripture. And some of it has a whole devotional behind it, and some of it's just the text. And he keeps me grounded every day, because some days I just don't get to the book. But if we're going to be healthy, if we're going to do what we do, then we have to have a healthy walk with God. I tell my staff, I don't know what you tell your staff, but I tell especially my house parents. I say, look, when a new kid comes to the children's home, I want you to show them Jesus before you teach them about Jesus. Because if they don't see Jesus in you, why do they want to hear about him? And so, we have to have a healthy walk with God. Brian Williams says, there's one big key to having a closer relationship with Jesus, and that is time. Time. And we can all say, we're too busy. We're too busy. We hit the ground running and we hit the ground till we lay our head on the pillow at night and we just never make time. If we're going to be healthy, if we're going to be successful, if we're going to thrive and survive in Christian childcare, we have to not just talk the talk, but we have to walk the walk. Well, I don't know that I've told you anything today that's earth-shattering. In fact, I know I haven't. I haven't told you anything that you didn't already know. But sometimes it's just helpful to be reminded, isn't it? Of the things that might help us to be effective in our work. And so I believe in all my heart, friends, that if You want to survive and thrive in Christian childcare, you have to develop a healthy peer group, make time every day to be a visionary, do a better job with self-care, set daily measurable goals, learn new ways to carry out our missions, and maintain a healthy walk with God. May God bless each of you as you continue to serve the most vulnerable. God bless.